the analysis of the notes with Lucas and Clara from El Comercio from Ecuador.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we're really digging into a massive legal story unfolding in Ecuador. Mm-hmm. It's called the Caso Sinohydro, a huge alleged corruption case, honestly, that could fundamentally change things there.
It's incredibly significant, yes.
And just a few days ago, August 27th, 2025, there was this critical court hearing. It seems like the whole thing is just, well, hanging in the balance now.
That's right.
So to really get what's happening now, we need to understand how we got here. Let's dive in.
Let's do it.
Okay, so that August 27th hearing, it sounds like it was pretty dramatic in the National Court of Justice, right?
Very much so. You had lawyers for all 24 accused individuals basically trying to get the entire case thrown out.
On what grounds? Procedural flaws.
Exactly. They were arguing their fundamental errors in how the prosecution built its case. It's, like you said, a high-stakes move.
Because if they succeed?
If they succeed, the whole investigation, years of work, could just evaporate, null and void.
Wow. So not just a delay tactic, but a potential full stop.
Precisely. This wasn't just some minor procedural point. It was a direct challenge to the validity of the entire multi-year probe into alleged high-level corruption.
So what happens depends entirely on this one decision.
In essence, yes. The implications are huge, not just for the people accused, but you know, for how people in Ecuador see their justice system working. It's a real test.
A crucial moment. So defense argued flaws. How did the prosecution respond? Did the judge react immediately?
Well, the prosecution fought back hard, defending every step they took, arguing everything was legal and by the book.
Mm-hmm.
It went on for hours, intense arguments back and forth. And then the judge decided to suspend the diligence.
Suspend the diligence. What does that mean practically? Like a pause?
Yeah, basically hitting pause on that specific hearing. Yeah. So the decision itself, whether to accept the nullity arguments or reject them, is still pending.
Ah, okay. So now everyone's waiting.
Exactly. And they're two completely different paths forward now. If the judge agrees with the defense, the case dies. It's over. Finished.
Just like that.
Just like that. But if the judge rejects the nullity requests, then the prosecution gets the green light.
To go to trial.
To present their formal accusation, their full case, arguing why these 24 people should face trial for bribery. It really puts the judiciary under a spotlight.
Okay, this moment feels incredibly tense, but like you said, it didn't come out of nowhere. We need to rewind a bit, right?
Definitely.
How did this whole thing even start? It goes back a few years to 2019, I think, something called the INA papers.
That's the origin point, yes.
Yeah.
2019, documents surfaced related to an offshore company, INA Investment Corporation.
INA Investment, and the link was?
The allegation was a direct link to Edwin Moreno. He's the brother of Lenin Moreno, who was president at the time.
Okay, so immediate high-level connection.
Right, and the core accusation was that this offshore company, INA, wasn't just sitting there. It was allegedly used as a channel.
A channel for what?
For illicit funds, basically.
Hmm.
Allegedly receiving money, goods, other benefits from contractors who had big public works deals in Ecuador.
Like a slush fund, almost, but offshore.
Sort of, yeah. A way to funnel benefits related to public contracts hidden away offshore. It suggested something quite organized.
And I remember the name itself. INA papers caused a huge stir. Wasn't there something about it being linked to the president's daughters' names?
That was the initial report, yes. Tied to the names Irina and Karina, the president's daughters. It added a very personal, scandalous dimension right at the start.
And President Moreno denied it all very strongly, didn't he? I recall him on TV calling it a barbarity.
Oh, absolutely. A very forceful public denial, which, as you say, definitely shaped the early narrative before all the facts could be investigated.
So that was the explosive start. But the case name changed, right? It became Sinohydro. Why the change?
Good question. By 2023, the investigation had evolved, and the prosecution officially renamed it Caso Sinohydro.
Bringing the company front and center.
Exactly. Sinohydro is the Chinese construction giant that built the Coca-Cola Sinclair hydroelectric plant, a massive flagship project for Ecuador.
And the allegation is that this project was the epicenter.
That's the core of the rebranded case, that the Coca-Cola Sinclair project, built by Sinohydro, was where this alleged bribery network really operated. The focus shifted from just the offshore account to the specific project and the main contractor.
Okay, now let's talk about the money, because the figures floating around this case are just astronomical.
They really are. It's hard to oversee the scale. The prosecution's investigation points to something like $76 million in alleged bribes.
$76 million.
Yes. Paid out between 2009 and 2018. It's considered the largest bribery amount in Ecuador's history.
Wow. I mean, just think what $76 million could do for public services. It's staggering.
It really is. And it suggests this wasn't just, you know, some side deal. It hints at corruption potentially being baked into the cost of major projects.
So how did they allegedly move that kind of money? It must have been complicated.
Very intricate, according to the investigation. The trail supposedly starts at the Bank of China.
Okay.
And then the money gets moved into accounts in Panama.
Panama, of course. A classic offshore haven.
Right. And these Panamanian accounts were allegedly controlled by a company called Commercial Recursa.
Commercial Recursa. Now, that name rings a bell. Wasn't that linked to someone close to President Moreno?
Yes, exactly. Commercial Recursa was the company of a man named Canto P.
And Canto P was?
Described as a close friend of then-President Lenin Moreno. And crucially, he was also Sinohydro's representative in Ecuador.
So the alleged middleman connecting the Chinese company and potentially people in power in Ecuador.
That appears to be the prosecution's argument. Canto P is the central figure facilitating the flow.
And from those Panama accounts, where did the money go?
Well, the allegation is that from Recursa's accounts, the money was distributed out to dozens of beneficiaries.
How? Just wire transfers?
Various ways, apparently. They mentioned dadivas, which are essentially gifts or handouts, yep. Also direct transfers, yes. And significantly, payments disguised through fake consultancy contracts.
Ah, creating a paper trail to make it look legitimate.
Precisely. To give it the appearance of payment for services rendered. And get this, the total alleged bribery amount, that $76 million, represents about 4% of the entire cost of the Coca-Cola Sinclair project.
4%? That's a huge slice.
A very substantial percentage for a project of that magnitude. It really underscores the potential scale and systemic nature of what's being alleged.
Okay, so we have the alleged mechanism. Let's talk about the people. Who are the key individuals facing accusations here? You mentioned the former president.
Yes, the list is quite long and includes some very prominent names.
Mm-hmm.
Former President Lenin Moreno himself, his wife, his daughter, two of his brothers, and their wives as well, his sisters-in-law.
The whole family, practically.
A significant part of the family, yes. And also family members and associates of Canto P, the intermediary figure we just discussed.
Right. Has the list of accused stayed the same throughout?
No, it's shifted. Initially, back in March 2023, mm-hmm. charges were brought against 37 people.
37, okay.
But that number has come down through a legal process called a dictum in abstentivo, where the prosecution decides maybe there isn't enough to proceed against someone right now. And another ruling called a sobreseimiento by the judge in 2025, which dismisses charges.
So people were dropped from the case?
Yes. The list was ultimately reduced to the current 24 individuals. It shows the legal system working through the evidence, you know, filtering cases.
I remember back in April 2023, there was talk of arresting Lenin Moreno. The prosecution asked for preventive detention, didn't they?
They did, for Moreno and several others. That would have been huge, a former president potentially jailed before trial.
But it didn't happen.
No, the National Court denied that request. They opted for less severe measures, like ordering periodic court appearances.
Why do you think they did that?
Well, it likely reflects the caution courts exercise with high-profile figures, balancing the need for accountability with due process rights. Plus, there's the complication that Moreno has been living in Paraguay since 2021.
Right, so he's not even in Ecuador.
Correct. And efforts to get an Interpol notification issued for him haven't been successful so far. It's actually quite interesting. The only person currently under preventive detention in this case is Wu Wai.
Who was he?
The former Sinohydro representative in Ecuador.
Ah, so the company man is detained, but not the former president residing abroad.
That's the current situation, yes.
Yeah.
It highlights the complexities when these cases cross international borders.
So instead of detention for most, what measures are in place?
Various things. Periodic check-ins with the court. Some individuals have electronic ankle bracelets. Travel bans preventing them leaving Ecuador. Standard precautionary measures in complex financial cases like this.
It's a real legal labyrinth. Okay, so let's bring it back to where we started. The August 27th hearing, the suspended decision. What's the bottom line now for Kesa Sinohydro?
The bottom line is uncertainty, really. Everything hinges on the judge's upcoming decision on those nullity requests.
If the judge says yes to nullity?
The case collapses. More than 6 years after the INA papers first broke, after all this investigation, it just ends. For many, that would feel like a huge blow against fighting corruption.
And if the judge says no?
Then the door opens for the next crucial phase, the preparatory hearing for trial. The prosecution lays out its case formally, arguing why these 24 should stand trial. It keeps the case alive, moving towards a potential reckoning.
It really is one of Ecuador's most defining corruption cases, isn't it? A test of the whole system.
Absolutely. Emblematic. It shows the sheer difficulty, but also maybe the persistence in trying to untangle these incredibly complex international financial webs.
The pursuit of accountability is clearly there, but the challenges are immense. It leaves us with a tough question, really. How does a country like Ecuador balance that urgent need for justice against corruption with the slow, complex grind of legal due process, especially when you're dealing with former top leaders and money flowing across borders?
That is the central question, isn't it? There are no easy answers.
Indeed. Something for all of us to think about long after this specific ruling comes down. If you found this deep dive into the Sinohydro case as compelling as we did, please do subscribe to The Deep Dive, share it with a friend who you think would appreciate getting into these complex stories, and perhaps leave us a review. We really do appreciate your support. It helps us keep uncovering these important narratives.
Comment, subscribe, and share. More information at www.commerce.com.